My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad that Bob introduced all the people and their jobs. I remember when the secretary of the Wednesday night meeting appointed me cake lady. You got as much time as I did. I changed the name to pastry technician. Just thought I'd throw that in there for you, Rick, in case you'd get a little whippy about that lady business. But I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober, but I want to say this about Debbie and Bill. People like you shouldn't drink alcohol. I mean, didn't you hear him? I mean, people are bad. If I was that bad, I'd have quit drinking. Man, I'll tell you that. But I am. I'm glad to be here. I want to thank Bob for extending the privilege of me being here. I have a belief that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these rooms. I have never got it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room and get sober and stay that way. Anything that I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, it seems to me is some type of an unearned gift that I really have no right to be having, because I've been sober for over 40 years now, and I've looked back over my life a lot of times, and I haven't ever found anything that would, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, that would allow me the privilege of living the way I live today. Nothing back there was good enough to just make up for today, if you really want to know the truth. So I have to consider that everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an earned gift from a God I discovered sitting with you people, because everything I know in life about life and a good life is something that I've learned sitting in these rooms with alcoholics and trying to follow the people who've gone before me and emulate their actions until they became my own actions. And so if you're new here sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, by no wild stretch of the imagination am I a consultant, a counselor, or authority on a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just an example, good, bad, or indifferent, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. It hadn't been necessary for me to swallow anything, smoke anything, or stick anything in my arm since somewhere before the fourth day of November, 1959. And that's a long time between drinks. Sometimes I'm so dry I think I'm a fire hazard, for Christ's sake. But I know there's some new people here tonight. I was talking to my friend Bill, and he always points them out, laughs at them. Look at that one. Well, if you can't make fun of newcomers, what good are they, for Christ's sake? Just think, you stay sober, you newcomers, you can make fun of newcomers. We call it getting even around here. I said in my first meeting that day in November that day I stared at these people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it very nearly became my first and last meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason was because the people, what I understand and what my limited hearing was at that time, the people talked to me about being sober. And I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me, because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. As physically sober. But that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny by people in little black and white cars. They're terrible, these people. I think it's amazing that the longer Alcoholics Anonymous is in operation, the more successful we become, the more the geniuses in the world sit around and figure out things to help us. We've even got people whose egos have grown so big that they write books better than our big book.
Oh.
Now, I have a monumental ego, but it hasn't grown that strong yet, I'll tell you that. I think I could write anything to addition to our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and a set of instructions therein that would bring up some peace and comfort at ease to a guy of my sort by the application of those principles. To think I could improve on anything like that would be to think that I was bigger than God Almighty, for Christ's sake, I suppose. But I sat during that meeting that day, these people talked to me about being sober, and I didn't think they had it. Some of these people, they dream up things. Not very long ago, they came up with a breakthrough in the treatment of alcoholism. They called it intervention. Oh, they were wild about that. Oh, they would just talk about it. The Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about it in 1940, for Christ's sake. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't have to worry about Mama coming to get you. I mean, they'll get you. And they just get to drive up where I was at and say, get in. Jesus. 39 years ago, that's what my sponsor said to me. Get in. Only they were a little more authoritative than my sponsor was. You know what? I've come to understand, if I'd have known then what I know now, I'd have had somebody follow me around with a video camera. And what you see standing before you tonight would be the most wealthiest man in the entire world, for Christ's sake. Because they beat the hell out of me. Just whipped the hell out of me. Just, of course, it helps if you got a bad mouth. You know what I mean? If you're talking about their mama and stuff like that, they'll whip on you a little, I'll tell you that. But I have been sober, like I told you, from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous today, or in a case of undrunkenness for a period of time, but without alcohol or chemicals in my system from that period of time to this one, and I've learned something here. It's something that a lot of people never learn, and sadly, I don't know why some people hear the music here and some people don't. I haven't got any clue about that, neither does anybody else. Nobody could understand why somebody who will come to Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober and stay that way and live a good life in Alcoholics Anonymous and do these things, and somebody will come into Alcoholics Anonymous with the same opportunity, maybe a little smarter, maybe a little richer, maybe a little dumber, maybe a little poor, sit in the same room with the same group of people hearing the same sound of the music and never hear any of it. Nobody will ever know that. There isn't any answer for that. And so you shouldn't have to trigger your mind or work your mind about things, because there are things that happen in Alcoholics Anonymous that there is no answer for. At least in my experience, there's no answer for them. There could be no answer, because I'm sure as I'm standing here that there isn't a God that sits around and picks us up to be special, wonderful, chosen people. I've come to understand about a God who treats everybody like his kids, and I would hate to think there was a God in the world who would pick a thing like me above some of the nice people that I know who have died from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. In my early stages of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in what I call a state of undrunkenness. That means I didn't have any alcohol or chemical in my system, but that's a long way from where I stand tonight, living in sobriety. Sobriety to me is the ability to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God, and if I couldn't learn that, and I couldn't live in that state of condition, I couldn't stay for that condition for a very length of time, I'd be drunk before I got home. And the reason I know that is because I could never do it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I quit doing the things that make me comfortable and joyous and free in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a very good chance that I'll drink again. You see, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what that means to you, but I can tell you what it means to me. If you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time, in the wrong set of circumstances, I'll be drunk. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have any more choice about that than I do flying around this room. I'm an alcoholic. My only chance at life, the only chance I have at life, is to not take a drink of alcohol. And the only chance I've got of not taking a drink of alcohol is not to put myself in such an emotional, painful state that I have to have some type of relief from it. Because I've heard people talk all the time about their first drink. I heard Bill talk about it. I heard Debbie talk about their first drink. Debbie liked the taste of it. Bill liked the explosion. What it did for me, it just made me go, that's all. And after being sober for a period of time, that's why alcoholics of my type drink. Alcoholics of my type do not drink after being sober for a period of time. And if I went out tonight to take a drink of alcohol, it wouldn't be to get drunk, and it wouldn't be to end up strapped down on the bed somewhere. It would be just to go, that's all. But you see, once I take a drink of alcohol, I have no control over the next one, because what happens to me, I ingest alcohol into my system. I trigger what the good Dr. Silkworth says is a phenomenon of craving, that once I take a drink of alcohol, I'm drinking beyond any kind of human help, which might be human knowledge. I did not know that. I did not know I was an alcoholic when I was a kid. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Oh, I'm restless and irritable and discontent, and I'm wandering around in the world seeking an answer to a problem that I don't know what it is. I just have this emptiness inside of me. I don't know what it is. It's a feeling of emptiness. It's all I can tell you. It was just empty in there. I knew a lot about whiskey. My people all drank whiskey. I came from whiskey drinking people. Man, they were Irish people. They had no type of religion to hold their guilt down, so they just drank whiskey. And I'm telling you, they did what whiskey-drinking people do. They just gathered up and beat the hell out of one another. That's what they did. They just stole each other's women and drank each other's whiskey, and, oh, God, I guess whoever survived was the king for the week. I don't know how they worked the deal out. But I don't remember that. I didn't know till many years later in therapy that I was scarred by that. I don't remember anything about it at all, except all I said to myself, I'm not going to drink. Look what happens when these people drink, for Christ's sake. I mean, they drink whiskey and they go to penitentiaries, these people. They drink whiskey and work in them whorehouses on the other side of the tracks. My mother drinks whiskey and beats up my dad. My dad gets drunk and beats up my mother. Every once in a while, they both get drunk and beat me up. I go, oh, no. I'm not going to drink alcohol. I'm not going to drink whiskey. I'm going to find my way out of this dilemma. So I started looking for a way out. That's my earliest recollection of life. I'm looking for a way out of this dilemma. Not the situation or circumstances that I lived in. I'm looking for a way out of this dilemma that I lived inside with. My secret little mind and my secret little thoughts. I want out of this thing. I want to walk around in the world and feel like the rest of the people, them kids I see out in them streets look. That's the way I want to do. I looked up, saw my grandmother. My grandmother lived, she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober over 40 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. Look at her, say you should have had a couple, Granny, make you feel better. My grandmother got up every day of her life, I suppose, and I remember she used to do it when I stayed with them on the weekend. She'd get up and step over the bodies, and she put on the best she had, and she left, and she was gone for a couple hours. When she came back, she was a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. She danced around these people and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. And I took a look at that. And I guess maybe that's what I wanted out of life. I wanted to feel the way my grandmother looked when she came back with that glow about her. And so I made a mistake, not knowing that what was wrong with me. I had some type of an idea that all I would have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does, and I'd be like my grandmother. You see, I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't realize that I was bodily and mentally from my grandmother because I hadn't been to Alcoholics Anonymous and heard our third chapter read. It was right here tonight. And so I didn't know any better, so I put my hand in my grandmother's hand and went and said to my grandmother's church and waited for whatever it was that happened to my grandmother to happen to me. And I don't remember anything happening to me. I remember just sitting there watching all them people doing all this stuff that they were doing. And I just sit there. But what I've come to learn in all the years I've been with you good people is that there was nothing in the world wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. You see, what I'm doing in that church is that I'm looking for something out here to make me feel better than here. And that only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. Always been there. Always been the problem. It's always been that emptiness. It's always been a void inside of me. My book in my disease of alcoholism is called A Spiritual Malady. And the reason I know that to be true is because that hole stayed within inside of me until it got a spiritual answer. And that spiritual answer happened sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house taking a drink of alcohol out of my grandfather's fruit jar. It answered the answer for me. And alcohol, whether you know it or not, is a spirit. I mean, I hate to drop anything new on you out here in Las Vegas, but if I need a spiritual answer, that's why alcohol was the answer for me. So alcohol was never a problem. I took a drink of alcohol. And like the Chinese philosophers read later on, the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. Because what happened to me for the next 20 years of my life, every time I took a drink of alcohol, the same thing happened and I ended up in the same way. I took a drink of alcohol. 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, they pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just travel around out there. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. I mean, it's a little more macho, for Christ's sakes. Well, if you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. Really. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle and didn't know what I was fighting. That's the dilemma of the alcoholic. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I threw everything into the battle. And I didn't know what was wrong. I never one time ever came out of one of them institutions and said to myself, "Self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink, self?" I never one time said to myself, "Self, why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and kill your baby brother? Self, why don't you go out there and have a drink of alcohol and tear your mother's heart out and throw it out on the ground? Self, why don't you go out there and destroy everybody you come in contact with for the next 20 years of your life? Why don't you do that, self?" No, I never said that. I drank because it was either drink or blow my brains out. That's the way I drank. I have to have some relief from this dilemma that I'm living in, and I don't know what's wrong with me. Then I take a drink. I take a drink not to get drunk or not to end up in a straitjacket somewhere with a high-pressure fire hose going off on me, or a policeman beating me in the head with a billy club, or a gangbanger shooting me or being stabbed or thrown up against the wall. No, I didn't drink for all those reasons. I drank to do just exactly what I told you that I would drink the night for if I had to drink, just to go. So you see, my only business in life today is to try to live in such a state of being that it isn't necessary for me to have to do that. You see? And what I've come to discover in the years I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, that Alcoholics Anonymous, at least the program that's written in our book, and at least the program that is practiced by the people that I hang out with, is designed to do exactly for me what alcohol used to do for me. It gives me that feeling of peace and comfort and ease and a purpose for being. And more important than anything else, a God of my very own. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. But I'm a long, long way from that first drink of alcohol to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sitting on street corners at 10 or 11 years old, drinking Marco Petri red wine when a guy tapped me on the shoulder and tried these. And he gave me some pills. I remember talking to him and saying, "What are those? Will they bother me if I take them?" I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can say. There's no telling what you could hear around here if I work. A couple of years later, I'm on the same street corner for another reform school. And I'm in with my little gang, and we're doing the thing little gangbangers think they're supposed to do, act tough and keen. And the guy stuck a needle in my arm. The next 14 years, I stuck needles in my arm, ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. So I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. The reason for that is, you see, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm self-serving. I've got an ego bigger than this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here. Maybe even a great deal of time today, I don't know, drifts in and out probably. Without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth, I wasn't interested in you at all, unless you had something I wanted. Then when I got that, I cast you aside like so much trash, I went on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Oh, I didn't live my life like that one day, or one week, or one month, or till the heat got on. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life, as far back as I can remember, a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And the sum total of that is what happened to me. At the ripe old age of 27 years old, I ended up crawling around in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. What's significant about that to me tonight is I wandered into this room and was embraced and met by friends and people that I've known for years, 25 years, 30 years, 5 years, 6 years, 1 year. What's significant about that to me tonight is when I came to in that cell, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of them back. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I wandered into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous 40-some years ago and got sober and stayed that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift that I've received sitting in these rooms. That's all. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November in that state of condition. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that day is because the institution I was in allowed women to come in there. That's why I came. Came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 40 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. So it doesn't make any difference to me why anybody else come here, whatever got you here. But you know, I've been sober for a long time. And my deal in Alcoholics Anonymous is to try to help people go through the steps. And every time I go through the steps with somebody else, I have to go through them again myself. And I've looked back over my life before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've said that statement in Alcoholics Anonymous for over 39 years now. And they may have been the instrument that drove me into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not the reason I was there. See, my last time out, I killed me. My last time out, I ended up in the old Los Angeles County Jail, 138 pounds of bright yellows, down on a concrete floor and couldn't get up. I'd had 2 years doing to me exactly what I wanted to do to me, anytime I wanted to do it to me, with as much money as I needed to do it with. That's what I do, left of my own devices, with all the money I need. And they strapped me down in the bed in the old Los Angeles County prison ward and stood my bed, the foot of my bed, my doctor, and told me I was going to die and nothing he could do for me. And I laid in that bed for a period of time, counting the walls and cracks on the ceiling and waiting to die. And one day it dawned upon me I wasn't going to die. I was going to live, and I was going to get up out of that bed. I was going to go to the penitentiary. I was going to come back and start that rat race all over again, and God knows I didn't want to do that. And one night, out of sheer desperation, I suppose, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." I didn't think anything happened, because there were no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an A meeting down there," and get up and wander off into the tulips of some of these great spiritual giants you've heard. I just went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many of you ever kicked a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I've been asleep in a long, long time. Tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around a jail looking for some more of the poison that put me back in the bed I just gotten off of. And the reason for that is the same reason I explained to you earlier, right back here where I live, is the knowledge. It's still there. It hasn't escaped. It's locked in a vault back there. Every once in a while, it opened its head and said, "Here I am." The knowledge, when I can't stand life on life's terms, I know what makes the big hurt go away. I know it. Oh, maybe it never did it last time, but I can forget that. I ain't looking for it to make it completely go away. I'm just looking for it to make a little bit of it go away. You know, I hear people talk about it all the time. Alcohol just quit working. My answer to that is, if alcohol quit working in your life, what the hell are you doing here? What are you doing in AA? If alcohol don't work. The reason alcoholics have to keep coming to these meetings is they know alcohol works. It has always worked. It's the only thing that ever worked in my life. So I got loaded again. I asked an old man about that once. I said, "How come? How come? Didn't I surrender with as much depth in my deathbed as you did in your kitchen floor in Beverly Hills, for Christ's sake?" He said, "Well, yeah, why, son? What do you ask?" And I said, "How come I got loaded again 2 weeks later and you didn't?" He said, "That's very simple. You got to surrender every day." These people are deep around here. You know that? I mean, they come up with stuff that just blows your mind. It's so simple that it escapes intellectual giants like me. See, it helps to have a little brain damage. It kind of slows you down enough to get this simple stuff that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh. Nope. You know the reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I know it as well as I'm standing here. My grandmother, who loved me more than she loved life herself, prayed for me every day of her life. Last time I saw my grandmother alive, she knelt down at my bed at Menninger's Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, and prayed for God to help her grandson, her beautiful grandson that she adored. She didn't know why I was in that dilemma, why I was in that state. And I'm sure my grandmother's prayers were good. But as I look back on my life, I can see something that I know to be the truth. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I was able to get it. It wasn't until I could get me out of the way long enough to ask for help that I was ever able to receive it. As long as they're trying to send it, it ain't coming in there because I ain't ready. The door's not open. How's it going to get there? It's just like bouncing off the wall. I'm not standing there. Prayers didn't help. But it wasn't until I asked God that I was able to receive this magnificent gift. That's why I came to that meeting. That's why I sat in that meeting. I didn't know what I was in. I didn't realize sitting in that meeting like many people here don't realize. I'm staring at the answer that day that I'd sold my soul for. I don't recognize the answer. I don't know what the problem is. It's hard to recognize. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. Hard. I mean, people say, you got a problem with alcohol. Well, Jesus, we're not drinking. No, I'm crazy. That's not a problem with alcohol. That's a disease called alcoholism. I didn't know that. I said in that meeting, people said that thing. I said, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I guess I'm not alcoholic. God, I wish I was alcoholic, I used to say. If I was alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink. I'd be okay. But there's something far more wrong with me than that. I don't know what it is. But it's not seemed to be the thing. One day, sitting in the back row where I sit with my coat collar up and my shades on, being hip. Well, I was hip when I got here. I mean, I'm so hip the balls of my feet tickle me when I walk. If I'd been any cooler, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. It's hard for me to understand how hippity-hoppity I was when I got here. If I'd had a hat, I'd had it on backwards. Guy said to me the other day, he said, do you think AA's changed since you've been here? I thought about that for a period of time. I said, yeah, in a way. You know, they like that. You know what I mean? The ones that want to be different like that. Yeah. How's it changed? That, well, when I got here, the men had tattoos and the women wore earrings. That's the only change I see around here, baby. Yeah. This little guy wandered into this meeting this day on a panel. This little guy did 23 flat years in the penitentiary, and he stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me something that all the great minds and the great learned people who had been looking at me and shocking me and dousing me with water and peering into my head did not know. He looked down where I was sitting and said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. That's what he said. You don't have to do it like this no more. I don't know what he said to anybody else, but I heard that. And my sick little, one-track, closed mind opened up for a breath, and that message came to me. All my life, since I've been that high, since 7 years old, one institution right after another, till I'm 27, 28 years old, still in an institution, they told me every time I got there, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problem. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times do I want to scream out at them, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. Very simple. But if you're not an alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. It amazes me why people ever waste whiskey. I watch them, boy. They're just terrible. Them airplanes are bad places for me to fly. People get drinks and don't drink them. Well, it kind of makes the time go away by creating resentment, you know. I went up to this little guy after the meeting, and I asked him, I only had one question for him. I said, how do you learn how to live? He gave me what I've come to understand is the greatest piece of information that anybody could ever give a searching newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. At least for this alcoholic. He said to me, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. I guess he prayed real hard, that little fella. I have been a student of our book called Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I haven't looked for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all society's ills. I'm just looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. That's all. The phenomena that takes place in my life is the closer I hear to these principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship just for the sheer joy of doing it. The more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me, the loving God has made me. That's all. You know what? I guess I went into this book to see if I could find me in there. Or I went in there because this little guy told me to go in there, or maybe it's one of them things that just happens to alcoholics that nobody has ever unraveled that mystery of why some people do and some people don't. because I was an alcoholic when I opened up our book. And I read through the doctor's opinion, and I read through Bill's story. And I got into a place where it says you have to start taking these steps. And I looked at the third chapter and said I had to admit to my innermost self I was alcoholic. I couldn't do that. I wasn't alcoholic. I was a dope fiend. Every time I say that word, it just... makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? Maybe I'll tell you, you're going to be bad, you better be bad. You know what the greatest single thing that ever happened to me in my life is not coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it almost seemed like heresy to some people. It's not getting sober. I was as physically sober when I came here as I am right now, so that hasn't got anything to do with that. Jailhouses get people sober, physically sober. The greatest single event that ever happened to me is not my children being born or my grandchildren being born or the lovely life that I have today and the wonderful woman I live with. Not at all. The greatest thing that ever happened to me sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. Our program of recovery says is the fifth step. I heard myself say to this man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. As I stand here before you this evening, is what I've known all day, is what I'll know all night tonight as I sleep, I'll know exactly what's wrong with me. You see, I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I separated me from you. I'm not like you. I'm a little better than you. I'm a little worse than you. I'm a little smarter than you. I'm a little hipper than you. I'm a little squarer than you. I am not like you. My case is different. See, when I became just like you, admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, it became my privilege to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 7,000 years of recorded history. This thing that's written in our book is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me in 7,000 years. And what a great privilege it is for me to try to live by it. Because the benefits are hard for me to describe to you if you haven't reaped them. And if you have reaped them, there's no explanation necessary. And if you haven't experienced them, if you haven't experienced those magnificent promises that come at the end of our ninth step in our program of recovery, when I've cleaned up the nightmares and the wreckage of my past, if you haven't experienced those kind of things, I can't explain them to you. But if you have, there's no explanation necessary. If you haven't come to discover a God of your very own here, I will never be able to explain that to you. A loving God who loves his children like I love my children, with more so than I can possibly, a frail, weak human being like me could ever possibly love anything, my God loves me even more. The God I discovered here, not my grandmother's God who punished little boys who were bad, not the one that kept me hiding from all these things, but the God I discovered sitting with you. I walked out of that penitentiary 39 years ago last Sunday to a world I didn't know anything about, armed with only one thing. The first nine steps of this program of recovery I had incorporated into my life and to the best of my ability had completed as much of them as I could. With a dream. It wasn't much of a dream. Not much of a dream that most people have after coming out of penitentiary. My dream was that maybe someday you would let me come and sit in your meetings. That's all. And I said to myself, if they would allow me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very proud to report to you tonight that for over 39 years in my life, I have done just about everything that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Because, you see, Alcoholics Anonymous never restored me to anything. It brought me to life. It introduced me to something and a stranger I'd never known. It stripped away the layers and the images of myself. It took away the convict and the badass and the gangster images that it created and wrapped around me. So deeply, I was so embedded in that sickness of imagery that I lived on all my life that I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And I used to lay awake at night in that cell when I'm laying in that penitentiary, not able to sleep because the nightmares were driving me crazy. I got nothing to make the nightmares go away, nothing to make me sleep. I've got none of these kind of things. I'm laying there in this torment, and I'm asking myself crazy questions like, wonder what ever happened? that little blonde-headed, blue-eyed kid whose only ambition in life was to play baseball. Whatever happened to that kid that was given a scholarship to play baseball for the University of California, Los Angeles? Whatever happened to that little kid that they came into the penitentiary and offered him a trial with the St. Louis Cardinals? Whatever happened to him? He took a drink. That's what happened to him. If you'd asked me if my life depended on it, when I'm laying in that agony in my cell in solitary in the middle of the night, and that madness all about me and that thirst is killing me, if you'd asked me what happened, I couldn't have told you that. Tonight, as I look back on my life, I can tell you exactly what it was. I took a drink. Not to get drunk and not to blow the scholarship, not to blow the opportunity to play Major League Baseball, not to do all the things that I was given the talent to do. I just took a drink, then the drink took a drink, and then the drink had me. That's my life. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked out of that penitentiary 39 years ago last Sunday. I went to see my mother, and she fell off the step blind drunk. I picked my mother up, and I put her on a couch, and I said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I'd like to stand here and tell you I got sober, and my mother got sober, and my kids got sober, and my dog got sober, and my cat got sober, and we sobered up, and we sobered and sobered and sobered. That ain't my experience. I'm sorry. Anybody who will ever talk to you beyond their experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, you should leave them alone, because all they're doing is putting you with a bunch of useless information that will do more than one thing if it doesn't destroy you. They talk to you about my experience was that I had to sit in Alcoholics Anonymous enjoying the fruits of this program and watch my mother drink herself to death for the next 30 years it took her, but she finally made it. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. I sat at my mother's bedside and watched my mother die. A guy said to me one time, "How long is your mother sober?" "My mother's sober. She drank herself till she couldn't drink, and she'd show up at meetings and stay here." But my mother never knew sobriety. She knew only a state of undrunkenness. That's all. She'd drink until she could no longer drink, and she'd come here and sit here until she could no longer sit here in a state of undrunkenness, and she would drink again. Sobriety is just an easy word to throw around here. But it's not. It's the most magnificent thing that we have, sobriety. Sobriety. I'm not talking about not drinking. I'm not talking about not sticking no needle in my arm. I'm talking about sobriety. And if I have to explain that to you, I can't. But if you don't need it explained, there is no explanation for it because you've experienced it. It's a oneness with God and the people about you. The last thing my mother ever saw of me, she looked at me and closed her eyes. The moment she closed her eyes, if you had said to my mother, "Aren't you proud of your son? Aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, he came out of them gangs, out of them penitentiaries, out of them things. Joined that Alcoholics Anonymous, found out he's an alcoholic, and look how good his life is." My mother would say to you, "My son's not an alcoholic. My son's life got a lot better when he quit running around with the Mexicans." Got nothing to do with Mexicans. I was raised with them. But my mother, according to some of these idiots in Alcoholics Anonymous, would say, "I guess your mama was in a state of denial." A denial is a river in Egypt. My book talks about a delusion. A delusion, not a denial. A denial is a lie. And you know you're lying when you deny something. You know why I know that? Every time I got arrested, I didn't do it. I denied that. A delusion is that I do not know the truth from the false. And I think my alcoholic life is the only normal one. And if I don't learn to have some comfort and peace and ease, I'll have to take a drink to get it. It's a great dilemma of every alcoholic. That's what it says in our book, and at least in the Good Doctor's Opinion, the greatest description of the disease of alcoholism that's ever seen. I went to a meeting one night, and a guy walked up to me and introduced himself as my sponsor. "What's that?" I said to him. He said, "Well, I'm going to help you get it done, John." The guy's name is Norm Alpey. He did not. Listened to his tape on the way to the airport today. My wife laughed, and I cried. I said, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "Why do you ask me?" And I said, "Well, you're my sponsor." He said, "I can't run my life, Johnny. What the hell makes you think I can run yours?" I said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He said, "Why don't you do what I do?" I said, "What is it you do?" He said, "Well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do." Ain't that heavy? Tried to find out what he did. And to find out what he did, I had to be where he was. Isn't that amazing? See how heavy I am? I get into some heavy stuff here, baby. And I had to find out what he did. Not here, in AA. I mean, we're all wonderful. How are you? I'm just fine, thank you. Wonderful world today. I'm sober today. By the grace of God. God is good. Went to a meeting this morning. Everything's wonderful. Up there, for Christ's sake. That's where I live. But I'm going to tell you a very secret little thing here that nobody talks about very often. If you don't do it here, where your life is in jeopardy, what the hell makes you think you're going to do it out there when it don't count? Isn't that amazing? If you're an alcoholic, Bill said it, your life is in jeopardy here. This is the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. And everybody that's got it don't want it. I ain't got it. Nobody tells you they got it in places where you pay that money. They say, quit drinking. You got a drinking problem. A drinking problem solved by not drinking. A problem of drugs is talked by not taking drugs. An alcohol problem, a spiritual malady, is solved by getting a spiritual answer and a spiritual way of life. It's learning how to give a little just for the hell of giving it. It's learning to be where you say you're going to be and do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. That's what's spiritual here. Spiritual is not, oh, I prayed this morning. Oh, I prayed on the way to work. Oh, I prayed there. I read my book. I read my prayer book. That don't mean nothing if you don't get up and go do it. Getting up and going out there every day and doing what I don't know how to do in a world I don't belong to denotes some type of faith that's within me. Faith I didn't come here with. Nothing. That's when I came. My sponsor told me I should get a job and go to work because I was a bum. And I told him I wasn't a bum, but I was a member of AA. He said, no, you're a bum. Bums don't work. So I got a job. Somebody stole my first paycheck. You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to the thief when they get stolen from. I ranted and raved and jumped and hollered. If I'd have caught that guy, you'd have another talker here tonight. I had a lot of things happening since I've been sober, but that old sponsor stood shoulder to shoulder with me and helped me through life. Taught me about things that you don't learn from a book. He taught me about things that I see only in places around the country. He taught me to have some consideration for the people who sit next to me in AA meetings. He taught me to be more concerned about their well-being than I was my own. That if I wanted to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want to listen, that was my business. But maybe the guy sitting behind me wanted to listen, or the guy sitting alongside of me wanted to listen. He said, have you ever thought about that, Johnny? And I said, no, I haven't really, Norm. Why? He said, I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. That's after I'd been sober for a while. That's after I'd been going to a lot of meetings. I'm still selfish and self-centered, sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sitting there, I'm not concerned about the people. I'm concerned about people seeing me. Look at me. Here I am. Praying around. I'm a speaker here. My sponsor taught me it was a God of my very own, if you want to know the truth. Told me to sit down and shut up and pay attention to what goes on in AA, even if I didn't want to listen. And so as I sit here tonight in that chair alongside of Bill, and I heard the fifth chapter and the third chapter, and I heard the announcement from the secretary, and I heard Debbie talking, Bill talking. I heard a serenity prayer. You know what the phenomenon of my life and the miracle in my life was? I was more concerned about those people than I was myself at that moment. That, to me, is beyond all understanding as far as I'm concerned. I'm more interested sitting in a meeting for a period of time than I am of the people around me than I am about myself. Such is the great miraculous treatment of Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism in our program of recovery, is that we learn to be more concerned about each other than we are ourselves at that moment. That's why when Bill came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous when he was new, he felt safe because people were more concerned with him than they were themselves. That's why I go to meetings 4 or 5 times a week. I don't go to meetings 4 or 5 times a week to not drink. I go to meetings 4 or 5 times a week because here I come in contact with my God. And I look at God's children doing things that God's children aren't supposed to be able to do. Just loving on one another. trying to be of help to one another, trying to reach out the hand. How are you? How are you doing? You know, and just, how's your day? And be concerned about it. I mean, that blows my mind. I go up and ask somebody myself, if it was interest in you, you better have something I wanted. What am I going to get out of this deal, or leave me alone? And so here I stand, 40 years later, and somehow or other something has happened to me where I am really concerned how certain people are doing in my life. Here as I stand before you tonight, I live with a woman that I adore. Absolutely crazy about this little woman. And I never thought I'd ever be able to care about anybody like that. I never have. I find myself doing things for her that I never wouldn't do for anybody. I have found myself being more concerned about her than I am about everybody else. And what has happened to me, I have taken my love for you, and slowly over a period of time, I've been able to transfer it and bring it into my home. Well, it hasn't always been there. I haven't always been that way. But I've always not been the greatest member of AA who's ever walked down the path either. I've done things here that I'm terribly ashamed of, sitting in meetings. But I've never justified my inactions. I have never justified my shortcomings in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have made my amends and gone on about my business. That's what my sponsor told me to do. If I harmed you, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to sit around my begging bowl and ask you to forgive me. What I've learned is that I have to forgive you. Isn't that amazing? It's in forgiving that we're forgiven, I suppose. I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear people say, I had to learn to love me if I could love you. So you hear an M discussion meeting. You know what that is, don't you? Nobody hears anything of discussion meeting except the people who are there to discuss. And they only hear what they're there to discuss. I don't judge. I just report to you the facts. You see, I don't even like me sometimes. Lots of times. Lots of times all day long. I don't like me at all. I don't like my actions. I don't like the way I think. I don't like the way I feel. So how in the world could I possibly say I'd learn to love me? But you know what? I've never not loved you. Not at all. I loved you from the first moment I ever laid eyes on you that day on the fourth day of November 1959 in this very instance. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that what I felt between us was a bond of love, one alcoholic for another. It's the common solution that we have here. That we share our experience, strength, and hope with one another in the hope that we can get somebody else to join us in this road of happy destiny that will lead us to magnificent feelings of joy and happiness and love and a God of our very own. I stand here tonight and tell you about many things that's happened to me since I've been sober, but I don't have enough time to do that. I'd be talking till next year sometime if I could tell you about the benefits that've been given to my life just for coming here, a beaten, battered, defiant, arrogant, different human being. And because you gave me a set of simple tools to follow, and you set by a strong example that if I would follow you and do what you told me to do, something would happen to me, and I have never made an effort to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous to change myself. I am not capable of changing myself. I am not capable of changing my attitude. I am not capable of doing anything except falling in line and doing what the people before me have gone. I talked to you a little bit about people writing books. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to make Alcoholics Anonymous any better. Not at all. I don't want to make it any worse. My only prayer, and God be, is that when I leave Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's the same as it was the day I got here. That's what I wish for. That's what I pray for. That's why when they ask me to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I do it. Because I've been given much. And for those who have been given much, much is expected. If you haven't ever got anything out of Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't ask you to do a damn thing here. You ain't going to do it anyhow. Well, if all you've done is come in here to warm your seat and get your court card signed and go on down the road or have a cup of coffee and move on down the road, that's all you're going to get. Be my guest. Be my guest. I live that way. I live that way for a long time. I don't live that way anymore. I got a brand new life, a brand new way of living, a host of friends, a God of my very own. I live in peaceful contemplation of Him who presides over us all most of the time. What a magnificent thing for a guy like me. If you're new, come join us. My sponsor will be here next week. And he told me to tell you this in passing, that I am not he you seek. He will be here next week. So come on in here and grab a spice of life. And my old sponsor, Norm Albee, before he died, the day before my 22nd birthday, he said it today on a tape I was listening to, and he said it every time I ever heard him talk. Come on in here and buy the whole package. The whole package. Not some Burger King type of attitude around here. Buy the whole package. The sponsorship, the book, the steps, the meeting, the commitments, the whole package. Come on in here and grab a package and go out there and spend a day just being yourself. Until we meet again on this happy road of destiny, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you.